Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Relentless Pursuit, a podcast series by the Shantz Mantione Group at UBS Private Wealth Management. Today, we will hear Thomas Mantione, Managing Director of UBS Private Wealth Management, talk to the founders of A Contemporary Theater of Connecticut, a regional equity theater in Ridgefield. I will now turn the mic over to Tom.
Thank you, Nicole. Hi, everyone. I'm Tom Mantione, and I'm jazzed today to talk to the founders of ACT of CT. As Nicole mentioned, ACT stands for a contemporary theater, and this is a regional equity theater in Connecticut. I am joined by Katie Diamond, Dan Levine, and Brian Perry. Being surrounded by this talent is a bit intimidating, I must say. I'm reading each of your bios in preparation for today. I wonder kind of what I've been doing with my adult life. So, Katie, the executive director of ACT, you are a singer, actor, writer, and producer. You've written, produced, and performed in numerous musical theater and cabaret shows over the past 20 years, Jersey Boys, The Pirate Queen. You had the opportunity to work with Dan on the Who's Tommy, Jesus Christ Superstar, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. And oh yeah, you have two albums to your credit. So thank you for joining us.
Of course, happy to be here.
Oh, and I also left out that you bake some super awesome cakes.
I do, I'm a baker.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. So Dan Levine, Artistic Director, what can I say? You've appeared on Broadway and in the Broadway national tours of Mamma Mia, Little Shop of Horrors, The Rocky Horror Show, Jesus Christ Superstar, Chicago, Les Mis, Tommy. You've worked extensively across the country and have been seen in Oklahoma, Next to Normal, Guys and Dolls, Man of La Mancha. Maybe we could sing The Impossible Dream a little later.
Oh, if you'll join me, absolutely.
I think my acting career stopped in middle school. We don't have enough time to cover everything that you've done, but it's oddly enough, it was your position on the Ridgefield Conservation Commission that brought us together.
That's right.
So thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Last but not least, Brian Perry. Wow.
I'll take it.
Currently the music director and conductor of Jagged Little Pill, playing on Broadway's Broadhurst Theater. I'm sure we all get back to Broadway soon.
Let's hope so.
Also music supervisor to the Broadway-bound Almost Famous. Looking forward to that. Wicked, Chaplin. There's a Craig Noel Award for Best Musical Direction of Almost Famous in there as well. And now you get to be the founder of a regional theater in Connecticut as well. So you keep yourself busy, I guess.
Trying to, yes.
That's
yes.
Great. All right, well, let's dive in. Enough of me talking. So can you tell our audience a little bit about ACT of Connecticut?
Sure, yeah. So ACT of Connecticut, ACT of Connecticut, is a small professional theater here in beautiful Ridgefield, Connecticut, part of Fairfield County. We are a 180-seat equity theater. And when we say equity, we're not talking anything about finances or money. Equity, right. Is Actors Equity Association is the union, mm-hmm. That all professional actors and stage managers must be a part of. If you ever see a Broadway show or a Broadway national tour, those are all equity members, equity actors. And so there are a handful of equity regional theaters in New England, and we are one of them. So it's great. It's a certain level of theater. And, you know, it's a little bit different from a community theater. Like our town's community theater is the mm-hmm. Theater Barn, which is a fantastic community theater. But a community theater is reserved for amateurs, mm-hmm. Amateur actors, whereas an equity theater is for all professionals. So we're able to hire a Broadway name, somebody from, you know, Broadway talent to mm-hmm. and designers and choreographers to work at our theater. But anyhow, Katie and I have known each other for many, many years. And when we first moved to Ridgefield, we both got involved at the Ridgefield Playhouse. I was on one of the artistic advisors for the Playhouse, and Katie, you were on the board, right?
The board, yeah.
Katie was on the board. And the Playhouse, we love the Playhouse. The Playhouse does over 200, you know, one night concert events type
Pretty
shows.
Pretty amazing.
It's an amazing
town
place.
Like,
yeah.
Ridgefield, that we,
yeah,
have all that.
Absolutely. What they're not set up to do at the Ridgefield Playhouse is to do limited engagement shows. Like, you're not going to go see a Les Mis at the Playhouse. Mm-hmm. You're not going to see Mamma Mia at the Playhouse. Mm-hmm. So Katie and I started fantasizing and thinking about what it would be like to open a professional theater in this town, and mm-hmm. you know, the type of actors that we would want to work with, and type of designers and creatives. And is, you know, and then we started sort of taking the temperature of the town. Is it something that the town would support? Is it something that the town needs and wants, and all of that? And overwhelmingly, we found that absolutely, yeah, people did. So, and of course, Brian, with his musical abilities and his incredible skill, was able to bring a lot to the table originally as well. And so we put together this fantastic board of original founders, board of directors, and opened the theater. I will say that And then we tell the story about the town, about the Schlumberger building and how we got this. With
Rudy. So the building that we're in was originally the Schlumberger oil headquarters here mm-hmm. in Ridgefield. It had been vacant for many years by the time we saw it, probably over a decade. And the town owns the property and didn't know what to do with it. And it just so happened that on these headquarters of Schlumberger, there was a small auditorium, a building with a kind of a corporate auditorium sure. inside of it. Rudy, our first selectman here in Ridgefield, brought Dan and I over here to check it out, and it was really in a state of disrepair, but it did have the bones to be a theater. Mm-hmm. And so then we really started dreaming about what this could look like. And we assembled, as Dan said, a really great board with a lot of very skilled Broadway technicians who could help us to design the space in the way we needed to make it a state-of-the-art theater. We hired a great architect and then found some funding to do a $2 million renovation yeah. on the space mm-hmm. to bring it up to how it is today, which is a state-of-the-art
which
theater.
Which is fabulous.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're actually, for your audiences, we're actually sitting on the stage right now. I think that something that's very, very special about this theater is that a permanent fixture in this theater is this turntable that we're sitting on right mm-hmm. now. And this is a revolving stage. So it's an interesting theater because the wings, that's the sides of the stage, stage left and stage right, are kind of shallow and narrow. And so there's not a lot of storage for set pieces and props and all that. So we had to sort of think about how do we creatively, what can we do for this theater to easily bring set pieces towards the audience and to bring actors around. And you know, I had done Les Mis, as you mm-hmm. said earlier, I did Les Mis for many, many years. And of course, as you know, the original Les Mis, the stage turns constantly and it's a really, really cool feature. And I said, gosh, if we could just afford a turntable in our theater. And thanks to a very, very generous donor, we got this turntable, which is a permanent, as I said, a permanent fixture in this theater that not a lot of regional theaters have. So we feel like it's really special. And you get to be on it right now.
I do get to be on it.
And I should turn it on.
Hopefully this is the only time I'll be on a stage. It's funny, you say the word audience and immediately your eyes and your body turn to the seats that are just in front of the stage and you light up. It's clear that this is something that you're passionate about.
We are passionate about it. And I will say that the support that we get, that originally we got from the town and continue to get from the town and the community, it's unbelievable. I mean, we often say at curtain speeches that, you know, new theaters start in church basements or high school mm-hmm. auditoriums and then grow and grow and grow. From there, we really, you know, we started our company, our theater, with this beautiful state-of-the-art theater. And we're like, I hope people show up. I hope we can get butts in the seats. And really, it's just been, we're just like always overwhelmed and grateful for the support.
Well, and the fact that the town really was behind us 100% from the very beginning mm-hmm. when it was just a dream.
Yeah.
You know, when
right.
we just pitched this idea for what we could bring to our community mm-hmm. and they got behind us. You know, there were many votes, town votes. It is a town owned property. So there were many, you know, town meetings and town halls where people could come and discuss what they thought about this proposal to have us in this space. And it was just, you know, at the end, there was a vote, a raise your hand kind of vote in our town hall. And it was a unanimous vote mm-hmm. to give us the lease and let us kind of fly here. So.
Yeah. Which is shocking. In this day and age, nothing happens unanimously.
I know.
It's true. Yeah. I don't think it's ever happened again.
It's a special town.
Yeah. It might not ever happen again. Brian, when I was reading your bio, you end with the arts are essential. And it's not just the shows that you're doing here. There's workshops and education along with it. So can you talk a little bit about kind of the nonprofit aspect of what you're doing and how important it is to the young people, not only in Ridgefield, but in all the surrounding towns that get to not only, I mean, you can say, oh, our humble beginnings in the town hall, but you're all Broadway stars. It's ridiculous. So,
well, you know, during COVID, it's been a really interesting time to sort of reconnect to that the arts are essential and what that actually means. And a lot of people have been having this conversation. And, you know, it's like, are the arts essential? Like air is essential, like water is essential, like food is essential. No, it's not. But, you know, the arts, they give life meaning. They make life worth living. They're a reflection of humanity. And, you know, I think in that sense, that's why it becomes so incredibly vital. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of debate around that because a lot of us aren't working right now. And like, right. How important are we? A lot of us artists are sort of doubting ourselves, but we keep reconnecting this to this idea that the arts really give life meaning, basically.
Sure.
And so, you know, along those lines, we think educating people about the arts and especially educating young people mm-hmm. about the arts matters a great deal. you know, again, we also believe here at ACT that limits breed creativity. So that's very true in this space, because it was a sort of, you know, limited space at first.
Sure.
But through everybody, Dan and Katie and all our wonderful board, we've sort of like made the limits work for us. And they're sort of our unique fingerprint on the arts, which is cool. Similar in COVID, you know, we've had to sort of reassess, and we're doing a lot of virtual classes, and
sure.
I teach a lot of Zoom lessons, and it's not just voice lessons. It's also like a lot of musicianship lessons.
Sure.
And, you know, I just talk about music with young people a lot, and that sort of opens up their minds, and hopefully we're sort of inspiring the next generation of creators.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say, you know, that limits breed creativity. It's almost the perfect segue into, you know, what are you doing with the limits that have been put on you in COVID, and how are you able to come figure this next kind of chapter out and reopen to, you know, I think for me, you know, the first reopening was kind of watching the first Yankees game, right? It was, okay, wow, I can actually watch sports again. That's interesting. There's no fans in the stands, but this is such an interactive medium. It would be almost unreal to try and be up here acting with no one in the stage. So talk a little bit about your next act.
Yeah.
Put on. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we call the past 7 months our extended intermission. That's what we've been referring to. We're a new theater. I mean, we are just entering our third season. And we've had, as I said before, we had incredible success for these first two seasons. But when COVID hit, we were just wrapping up the end of our second full season. So we had to cancel our last two productions, and we also had to cancel our summer camp, and we canceled our in-person gala. And for a small not-for-profit theater like us, that, you know, that's a $400,000 hit, which is very significant for us. Very, very, very significant, in a scary way, significant for us. So quickly, we, you know, everybody likes to use the word pivoted. We quickly pivoted to virtual things. We had a virtual gala, which actually was terrific.
Ton of fun.
Yeah.
It was fun.
And of course, as Brian just said, all of our education programs transitioned to remote and virtual. You know, with the loss of those last two shows, which was Freaky Friday and then a beautiful show called Nickel Mines, which we had to cancel, as I said, at the end of last season, we spent this summer really not knowing when we would be able to reopen, what the state was going to allow, when people would feel comfortable coming back, what our union, as I said, we are a union theater, what the union was going to allow us to do. And what we knew that we were not going to be able to do was open when the time comes, open with a big musical like Freaky Friday or like a Mamma Mia. Freaky Friday, as I said, was the last show of last season, which we had to cancel. And we had considered, okay, when the time is right, let's reopen with Freaky Friday. It's a musical with how many people?
20
people, a lot of musicians, a lot of technicians, a lot of designers. So we knew that just wasn't going to happen. As we started understanding Connecticut's various phases and the reopening, what we were going to be allowed to do, what we weren't going to be allowed to do, again, as well as our union, we felt that the last 5 years, which is the musical that we are going to be doing end of October, November, which we'll talk about, I'm sure, in a minute, it's a two-person, intimate, beautiful musical that Katie, Brian, and myself have always wanted to do at ACT. We're planning on doing it in a couple of seasons from now, but we were like, oh my gosh, now is the time that we actually must do this musical. And so we spent really the past, I would say, 12 weeks working with the union, working with the state, and really figuring out what our safety and return plan is going to be. I will say that the Actors Equity Association requirements, they really do care about their members, and it's incredibly strict. It's so strict and regulated. It's much more stringent than, is that the right word? Stringent than even the Connecticut phase reopening
stuff.
I mean, it's hundreds and hundreds of pages that we had to create, submit to our Union Actors Equity Association, who works with OSHA. And then there's weeks and weeks of back and forth about the HVAC, about how to socially distance people, about how the actors are going to interact, about rehearsals, how the props are sterilized, what kind of materials are we allowed to use, what kind of filters must be in the... I mean, so much stuff. It's actually, we've learned so much this summer.
More than you wanted to know about OSHA and working environments.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But we decided for those reasons to do this show. And we also decided to keep it all as part of the ACT family. So all of the designers on the show, lighting designer, set designer, sound designer, costume, all that, are people that are part of the ACT family,
right.
Board members. You know, our board is made up of incredibly talented, successful, professional Broadway talent. We've got a lighting designer on our board. We've got a technical director on our board. We've got like Tony Award winners on our artistic board. And so those are the people that are going to be creating this show, as opposed to bringing a cast from New York City,
sure.
Or as opposed to bringing a director from New York City. We felt, listen, if we have to pivot again, if dates have to change, if something has to, we can at least do that in-house.
Yeah.
And so that's the reason why we chose
Super
the last
smart.
5 years. Yeah. And we'll talk about this. It's such a beautiful, beautiful show that I think is really right for the time that we're living in right now.
That's awesome. So how hard has it been? You talked about a $400,000 hit. You know, a lot of the smaller nonprofits that we work with, both as a team, you know, Chance Mantione, but also my wife and I personally, have felt like a whole crowding out this year, whether it's COVID relief or some of the social justice things that are out there, or the fires in California and disaster relief. There's been so many things that are, you know, top of mind for everybody, in the news, on the front page every day, screaming for philanthropic dollars. Have you guys found that same feeling where it's been a little bit difficult to raise capital?
Yeah, the answer is yes. You know, it's sad to say that a lot of regional theaters like us, not only are they not going to be reopening next season or this season right now, you know, for the entire year, but some are just never going to reopen again across the country. I mean, it's been, yes, like COVID has been devastating on every industry. Everybody's
sure.
been impacted. But for the arts, for restaurants, for the arts specifically, it's devastated the
sure.
arts and theater. And so, like I said, a lot of small professional theaters just will not reopen. They don't have the resources. And yeah, we have found that some sponsors and donors that usually, you know, that for the past 2 years have given a specific amount simply can't do that right now. And we have found that some grant opportunities that we were up for now are not happening because of, right? So yeah, we have felt a big impact. The good news is that we still do have very like generous donors and sponsors. But, you know, on the flip side of that, we're not a theater like the Westport Playhouse or like Goodspeed Opera House, who's been around for decades,
right.
that have endowments already and that
sure.
have this, you know, that have like injections of funds all the time. We're still a new theater, right? So it's scary, and it has been very, very scary. The good news is that this show, as long as we break even on this mm-hmm. show, we're okay. I mean, we luckily, you know, the government, the PPP
sure.
stuff, we got some funding there, and we were able to spend it in the appropriate way. And that has kept us going for the past
sure.
7 months. And we just hope that, you know, as I said, last week of October and then all of November is when Last 5 Years will run. And we hope that the year, the season, the community, it progresses with COVID. It progresses the way that we hope that it will progress, so that
right.
by winter, when we do a little bit of a bigger show, that more people can be in the
yeah.
theater. And finally, next May and June, when we do what was meant to be our big musical, Into the Woods, that we could have maybe at least 80% capacity of the theater,
sure.
and just slowly get back to normal. We've had to really, really adjust our calendar. We were supposed to do Chorus Line this year. We obviously canceled that. We just simply can't do that right now. But I do feel as though Katie, Brian, and myself have made really, really smart decisions for the theater, always keeping in mind that it's, you know, yes, it might be like, oh, what a shame we had to cancel Freaky Friday. We understand that it's for the good of the community, and we, our patrons and our actors and our crew and our technicians and our staff must come first in terms of safety and health and all of that. We're just hoping that things now start to open up a bit and progress as we hope that they progress, and that sooner than later we'll be back to normal.
We're with you 100%. Things progressing, I think, is good for everyone.
Yeah.
Whether it's the restaurateurs or the arts, I think those are probably the two hardest hit industries
for sure.
in the country. So let's talk about the last 5 years. I can't remember what my last 5 years were like, but after the last 6 months, I'm trying to forget. I know, Katie, we talked briefly and you said this was something that you always wanted to do.
Yeah.
Dan said the same thing. So now you have the opportunity. So
yeah.
tell us how this is going to work. I hear maybe even live streamed, and
definitely
I think we have
streamed.
Some ideas
yeah.
about that as
yeah.
a team. So
yeah, we definitely are live streaming. We did get the rights to live stream the show,
fantastic.
Which is fantastic. And it means that, you know, not only do a lot of people get to see the show who maybe aren't comfortable coming out to the theater, but also we are hopefully able to break even with the ticket sales, mm-hmm. you know, so that we're not losing money to do this production. I mean, our main goal with this production is, as Dan said, is not to even make money. Mm-hmm. It's just to come back, show the community that we're still here, bring them some arts and entertainment, and, you know, try and stay relevant in this time, which is tricky. But this show is, it's always been one of my favorites. It came out in 2002, is that right?
Yep.
And it's just, you know, there's something really beautiful, first of all, about a two-person show. Mm-hmm. I think in the first place, you know, that it's just so intimate, you know, the really diving deep into their relationship. And the show is about a man and a woman in their five-year relationship from the beginning, from when their first date until they divorce at the end, and they get married halfway through. But what's interesting about the show and the storytelling in the show is that the timelines are told differently. So Jamie, the male character, his timeline goes from the very beginning in order, from the mm-hmm. first date to when he leaves at the end. But Kathy's story is told in the opposite way. So she's remembering it from the end to the beginning.
So interesting.
At the very beginning of the show, her first song is when they have split up. And then you kind of she goes backwards from there. So the only time they actually are in time and place at the same time in the show is at their wedding, which is about halfway through the show. Yeah. So it's really interesting storytelling. The music is just beautiful. I mean, it's, as a singer, it's just the most singable music ever. It beautiful, sweeping melodies that, you know, I think are I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but I love it.
It's Jason Robert Brown
is an amazing composer and writer, and it's just so wonderful to sing his material. You know, and just the storytelling is so, how he tells the story through song is just so specific. It's so interesting. It really, I mean, I don't know. It really makes you think. And it's also just entertaining. I mean, you know, he has levity in the show, but also some really deep moments.
It's an emotion.
You mean like every relationship, there's highs and lows?
There's highs and lows.
I've never experienced that with anyone in my life.
Right? It is a very funny show, actually.
It is funny.
It's a really funny show, but it's also very, you know, it's a highly emotional show. And it's real. Like, we all go through these things. Brian, talk a little bit about Jason Robert Brown and the music. Jason Robert Brown, I will say, is one of the finest contemporary music theater composers of our time. Tony Award winner. He wrote Parade and Bridges of Madison County and 13 the musical.
Wow.
This one, of course.
Yeah, well, it's pretty varied. Each song is kind of its own little universe. And so Jason picks sort of a musical style to reflect that. So there's sort of like an up initial song for the character of Jamie that's kind of got a really driving sort of Latin and rock beat to it that kind of mirrors his sort of frenetic energy. Kathy's first song is almost like a church hymn, and it actually quotes Yeza Joy of Man's Desiring through it. So it's a very sort of somber moment, and things like that, you know, happen throughout the show. So there's a huge variety. It's super fun to play. It's super hard to play, which is really great. The thing about Jason Robert Brown is he does many things. He's an orchestrator, he's an arranger, he's a music director, he's a conductor and composer, but he's also a lyricist. He wrote the lyrics in the show. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the really, as you're sort of hearing Dan and Katie say, he expertly has written these characters and is not afraid to show their flaws. And so you realize through sort of brilliant economical lyric writing, the sort of imperfections of these people. These are not perfect people. They have flaws and they have problematic views on things. And it's, you must listen carefully.
Yeah,
it was
made into a film in 2014 with Anna Kendrick and Jeremy Jordan. Mm-hmm. And it's actually a beautiful movie as well. It's, you know, as Katie was saying, it's a really, really interesting show because of this chronological and reverse chronological order theme that runs throughout the show. The audience, you sort of, if you don't know the show, it takes about 5 minutes to understand, oh, I see what they're doing. Mm-hmm. They're now telling the story backwards. And it, you know, it clicks with the audience after about 5 minutes. And then it's really, you know, the audience spends the next 80 minutes just really, really like tracking, like, oh, I see they're going to get to, oh, you know, that's their first date, but that's how she's interpreting their first date. And so it's, you got to sort of pay attention to the show, but it's brilliant, actually. And it's one of the most intelligent musicals, I think, written. And I think that that's why Jason Robert Brown has often been compared to Stephen Sondheim in a way, just because of how smart it is, how smart the lyrics are, how intricate and complex the music is.
Yeah. I see this suit, so our audience can't see where we are, but we're, as Dan said before, we're on stage, and I see this gorgeous Steinway behind me. So Brian, are you just going to be on stage playing?
Yes, I made them get it. I was like, I'm not doing this unless there's a gorgeous Steinway on stage. I'm sort of positioned in a way that I can be revealed when necessary and I can be hidden when necessary. So, but that's something that I do appreciate about Dan and Katie is that they respect music, where a lot of people sort of forget about the music in musicals, mm-hmm. which is kind of strange. You think I'm kidding, but I'm not. I've played on Broadway in basements and, in other rooms and, basically other states, it seems.
Yeah.
So, we value that here. We value that, the sort of live component of it. There's always live music here. The music is almost a third character in this show.
That's right.
I love that. So. That's really intriguing. I can't wait to see that. And that's something that probably didn't make it on the screen in the movie.
No, you just hear the
music. Yeah. Uh-huh. That's right. Yeah. So, it's funny. As a team, we're on our morning huddle. We get virtually together every morning at 9:15. One of our colleagues, I hesitate to call him Cliff Clavin, but he is the master of like every known fact. He's only 30 years old, but Charlie is, he knows facts about almost everything. So when I mentioned the idea that, hey, we were thinking about doing this podcast, promoting the show, but also having a client event around one of the live stream performances, Charlie said, oh, I saw the movie. It was a great movie. It didn't really do well at the box office, but a fabulous show. And then literally launched into the whole story that you just described.
Oh my gosh.
So there's a 30-year-old out there that saw the movie, a millennial. He's like the anti-millennial, though. He's a millennial, but at the age 30, he owns a home and has 3 kids.
Okay.
So, wow. Just not your typical.
Yeah.
So not only the Steinway we see here, but I've got the poster and talk about complicated relationships. Katie, you're in there with a smile from ear to ear. Dan, I'm not really sure what that face
he's
is.
Over but
you,
it.
Yeah. It's like, I'm done with this. Like, yes. Where am I going next?
But if you actually look, so he's referring to the show poster that we're promoting the show with. So on the wall, though, look, we were happy then.
Uh-huh. Right?
And then look there, here's a sunflower with the petals with like wilting and dropping, like the marriage is like just sort of failing. But yeah, I thought that this picture, and also this, we like that this is only in color, everything's black and white, but the picture is like Katie really, she's basically saying, smile, damn it, smile. We're still together. Smile. We want to use this for our Christmas card or whatever, right?
Uh-huh.
And me, you can see I have the pad of paper and a pen. I'm a writer. Jamie is a writer. And it's like, oh, she's bugging me again. So it tells the story of the show.
Not another selfie.
Not another selfie. That we're just like always at odds and in different mindsets as it pertains to the relationship. So this was actually a really fun photo shoot to do a few months ago.
And the reality, I think, of the mental health issues that everybody's been going through in this environment, I think a lot of relationships have gone through 6 months of a little bit different than they were kind of the years before. I know at one point, my wife looked at me and said, you've never actually been in this house for this long in a row, which at the 2-month mark was true. And now we're 6 months later, flattening the curve still. And I'm still home.
Yeah.
And who thought we would be here? But I'm excited that you guys are going to join the reopening and bring some happy levity, relationship-driven comedy and musical with a little bit of angst, maybe.
A lot of angst.
Just a lot of angst.
Yeah, don't worry. Good angst.
It's not all happy. It's not all puppies and butterflies.
Some puppies and butterflies. Also some dead sunflowers.
We are really, really just so grateful that we were given the permission to also live stream the show because, right now we're the Connecticut State reopening plan, but the current phase that we're in, which is 2, allows only 25 audience members right now. We're hoping that by phase 3, which should be in the next couple of weeks before we open, will allow either 50 people or 50%. And, and that really does limit the audience. So the fact that the licensing agency gave us permissions to live stream it, which does not happen a lot, I will say.
I would imagine.
It's great. It's great. So we can still engage all of our audiences. And
looking at the silver lining, if you will.
Yeah.
This is actually allowing us to really expand beyond our community. My entire family's on the West Coast, and they will all be able to live stream and see one of our productions. I have, my siblings have never seen a show here, and now they'll be able to not only see a show, but see me in the show. And I have people all over the country who are excited about watching it. So it's really expanding our reach in a different way than we ever thought we would be, but
and groups that are coming together to like have watch parties and stuff like that, which
it's
I love.
Interesting how people are choosing to.
And that's what we're going to try and encourage to our client community is, you know, to get together with the people that they're with now and enjoy some Broadway caliber musical from Ridgefield, Connecticut, mm-hmm. whether you're in Scottsdale, Arizona or Plano, Texas or Naples, Florida. We did an event in the middle of this that was a wine tasting event, and we had over 120 people on Zoom tasting wine all over the country. We could not talk about silver linings, right? It's an event we never could have had.
Right. And you never would have thought of it before.
Correct.
It's changing the way we're thinking about how we connect with people, mm-hmm. which is, you know, I mean, I wish COVID didn't happen, but at the same time, it's letting all of us kind of expand beyond our imagination.
Limitations breed creativity.
Yeah. I think the big thing is to, you know, sort of ask people, implore people, please come back.
Mm. Right.
Back to normal. Like we won't stay live streaming forever. Nothing. I'm so glad we're doing it. Nothing replaces live theater.
Oh gosh, no.
You know what I mean? And that's just, you know, that's not, I hope we don't head that way. Yeah. And I hope we stay live, but that the live stream thing is like sort of a temporary thing that brings joy to people. But please, you know, I just
come back to the theater.
Come back to ACT, come back to Broadway.
Yeah.
You know, I miss my job so much.
Sure.
You know, it's like, it's going to be at least a year, but it's going to hinge on whether people decide to come back.
Mm-hmm. It's funny when you guys were still not here yet and Nicole and I were setting up and she's never seen a theater before. And the first thing she said was, my gosh, it's so intimate. Mm-hmm. It must be amazing to be sitting, you know, so close to the actors and the performance that it's got to be just unbelievable. And, you know, Tizzy and I have been to everything, I might have missed one or two because I was on the road, not on the road anymore, but it is, no one out there listening can see this, but it is an intimate theater and a spectacular place in a beautiful Norman Rockwell town of Ridgefield, Connecticut to come see Broadway caliber. And I think you all heard the bios in the front end. So Broadway caliber people perform for an intimate crowd. So, well, I want to thank all of you for doing this and spending time with me today and our audience out there somewhere. We're all looking at, right now at the seats.
At the empty seats, 180 empty seats right now. No, thank you for supporting us and your family is just like so generous and supporting the arts and ACT and so important in Ridgefield and to Ridgefield. So we really personally appreciate that.
Thank you for that.
And I hope that your listeners will maybe want to watch the show.
So everybody be on the lookout. The invites will come out for November 11th is the plan for us. That is the Wednesday 7 p.m. show. So I'm going to add the pressure to the,
Wednesday?
Thursday.
Maybe it's Thursday the 11th?
I don't know. I think it's Wednesday the 11th at 7 p.m.
Did we add a Wednesday show? Maybe we don't know the schedule.
Yeah.
Yes.
Maybe cut this part out.
So I'm going to add extra pressure on you that all of us will be watching from home. I know Tiz and I are going to throw the watch.
If it's not on the calendar for November 11th, Wednesday, then it now is.
Yeah, it's on.
It's on there. Okay, good.
I think that we added a Wednesday.
Oh, great. Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah. Which fits our whole Wednesday. Maybe you did it for us and you didn't even know.
We did. Let's say we did.
So thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Great to see you.
Thanks for being here.
Bye-bye.